Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, August 12th, 2017. This is episode 1412. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by WordPress. Your customers want to find you. Build a WordPress.com website and help them connect with your business. Get 15% off any new plan purchase at WordPress.com/Tech Guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, virtual reality, augmented reality. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the real phone number if you want to. See, I wonder if we someday will be doing this show and you could put on a visor or a helmet and be sitting right here looking around. Boy, would that be boring. That would not. I think I'm a little, you know, that's, I think one reason I think VR maybe is a flash in the pan, a little gimmick, maybe until we can, like, you know, plug it into a port in the back of our neck or something and really feel like you're there. If you have to put on the weird helmet and you're looking around, it's kind of queasy making and it's not super high quality. And I think it's a gimmicky kind of a thing. Great for amusement park rides. I'll grant you that. That Harry Potter ride in Universal Studios, that's amazing. You really feel like you're flying. But that's a lot of equipment, and you actually are moving around, you know, as well as looking through 3D glasses and at screens. It's still virtual reality because it's big screens instead of a visor. Anyway, we can talk about that. Anything on your mind, our home theater guru, Scott Wilkinson, in about 25 minutes. He'll be here talking home theater. We talk about all the stuff with a chip in it. 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, Skype will do, or anything lets you call a phone number in the U.S. You know, voice over the internet kind of thing. You can't call us direct via Skype, but you can call our phone number 8888 Ask Leo, and that would still be toll free. I think. Can't promise. Don't know what happens in the rest of the world. I do know what happens in the tech world, all around the world. Consumer Reports. Now, I don't normally go to Consumer Reports for technology recommendations. You know, you'll probably go to the tech magazines, things like that, for the technology reviews and things like that. But Consumer Reports does have data that no one else has, and that's long-term reliability data. They send out a questionnaire to all of their subscribers. I don't know. It's more than a million. Asking them, and it's been useful for cars because, after all, when a reviewer, and I include myself in this, gets a laptop or a phone or any tech device, we use it. We can give you some idea of what it's like, you know, the out-of-the-box experience when you first get it. Very few of us will continue to use a device. I try to on the big ones, like continue to use a device like the Samsung Galaxy S8 or the iPhone 7 Plus or the Microsoft Surface laptop for, you know, months, years. I buy the things. I don't get them from the. See, the manufacturers when they review something are reviewing a loaner from the manufacturer, which they'll have to send back in a couple of weeks or a month. So there's just no way they could do a long term review. So at great expense, I might add, you know, I do this for you. At great expense, I buy everything. It's for you. You understand. But even then, I don't have that long-term experience and millions of data points that Consumer Reports gets. So they just downgraded the Surface, Microsoft's first hardware line, you know, first laptop and computer hardware line, the Surface Pro, the Surface Studio, the Surface Laptop. They just downgraded it and made it a do not recommend because in their data that they're getting back from questionnaires from readers – they're seeing poor reliability. Now, I bought a Surface Book when it first came out. I bought a Surface Studio when it first came out. Still using both. They seem to be pretty reliable. Surface Book had its problems. For the first 8 months or so, Microsoft was kind of trying to figure out why they wouldn't go to sleep properly. There were firmware issues, but they eventually fixed it. I'd actually ding them for that. Haven't had the same problem with the Studio. That's been pretty reliable. That's the all-in-one that kind of lies down like a drafting table. I really like that giant screen. Way too expensive. Can't recommend it for that reason. And I have, I'm holding it up. If you could only see me on the radio, I'm holding, imagine if you will, a dapper fellow of a certain age in a sport jacket. I'm sorry, I'm talking about the laptop. Holding up a kind of burgundy, a wine-colored Surface laptop with, I might add, a beautiful Alcantara fabric by the keyboard and trackpad. Beautiful. Lovely. But consumer... Now, this one's so new that I don't think Consumer Reports has reliability data on this. Although we have some questions because... I have to admire the enterprising nature of one computer magazine reviewer. I don't know who it was. Who rubbed Cheetos into the fabric on the keyboard, and try as he might, could not remove them afterwards. You know, the Cheeto dust was embedded in, and that's pretty disgusting. So see, he went the extra mile. He probably sent that back to Microsoft, though, right? See, he didn't buy. I'm not going to do that because I spent $1,200 on this thing, and I'm not going to rub Cheeto dust into it. So far, it's held up pretty well. But I do think, you know, a lot of people poo-pooed it, you know, Consumer Reports, oh, who listens to them when it comes to technology? That's one data point I would listen to them on, long-term reliability, because no one else covers that. We've talked before about viruses. You know, I've always said in order to get on your system, a bad guy, a hacker, a virus author has to get you to run a program or get a program to run on his system. But sometimes he can do that in a very tricky way. See, a lot of the things you use on your computer are actually little programs. Your fonts, your typefaces, those TrueType fonts are actually little programs. In that font is a little program that describes how to draw every letter. And then there's a library on Windows that draws the letters, renders them is the word we use, render them. And if there's a problem with the program or a flaw in the program that renders the letters, then a bad guy could create a font, a typeface, that could actually take over your computer, could be malware. We've seen this happen with Word files, that those can be weaponized. Even images, JPEGs, because Microsoft had a problem with one of its libraries rendering JPEGs, could be carefully malformed to contain a virus. Wow. Now, usually that's easy to fix because all Microsoft had to do is fix those libraries. Actually, that wasn't that easy because it was on every version of Windows since God created Windows. Did God create Windows? It feels like that. I don't know. Somebody did. So now here's a new attack. This is really scary. Forget infecting fonts or PDFs. Research will be presented this week. A group of researchers from the University of Washington will present it at the Usenix Security Conference, big security conference. They have been able for the first time to encode malicious software into DNA, physical strands of DNA. Now, normally, this doesn't mean that, you know, if you got injected with that DNA, something bad would happen to you. It's not like that. But if somebody's using a genetic sequencer, some software that analyzes the DNA, if they analyze that malware DNA, it would infect the software and take control of the underlying computer. What the what? Wired Magazine writes about it and says, well, that attack is far from practical for any real Spire criminal. It just shows you these. I'm worried because I think the tools that hackers have now for weaponizing stuff have become so sophisticated. It feels like we don't have a chance. If they can infect DNA, what? 88 ask Leo the phone number. We can talk about something a little more close to home. Your computer or technology issues, how to buy, how to sell, how to abuse, how to infect, anything like that. 888-827-5536. Kim Schaffer's here to answer the phones, and we will get to your phone calls next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 88 Ask Leo. If you go to google.com, today's Google Doodle celebrates the 44th anniversary of the birth of hip-hop. Wow. It's kind of a fun Google Doodle if you get a chance to see it. 8888 Ask Leo. Do you make a point every day, Kim Schaffer, of going and checking out what the daily doodle is from Google?
No, I don't.
it started, you know, with just a few, like a doodle, literally a doodle on the word Google, and now it's become a massive production.
I like them, but I don't make a point to check it out every day. I didn't even know they did them every day.
Yeah, this is like a video and it explains what hip hop is, and wow.
Elaborate.
It's elaborate. Now, you don't see it. If you just go to google.com, all you'll see is the illustration and a play button.
Mm-hmm.
Remember when Google, though, like they celebrated, they were famous for the simplicity of the Google front page. Nobody goes to Google anymore.
I do.
You do?
Yeah.
You don't just type it in the bar at the top of your browser?
No, I still Google.
You still go
to Google? I mean, it might default to Google if I just typed it in the bar. I'm not sure.
It does.
Yeah.
So that's Googling, but it's not Googling at the Google.com
homepage. I think I'm old school. I still type in Google.com.
Yeah. Wow. You know, I remember going to Google once many, many years ago, probably 8 or 9 years ago, in the lobby. They used to have, they probably don't have it anymore, a big screen that would show search results.
Oh, did they?
As they were coming in. You couldn't do that anymore because I'm sure they get millions a second.
Yeah.
But at the time they could. And it was, the number one search result was for Yahoo. Like people, but
they
think
Google Yahoo.
Well, I think people still do it. If you just go to the top of your browser and you type in
Yahoo,
like instead of typing, I see people do this all the time. I'm always with great interest watch people use computers to see how normal people, you know, use them. And very frequently, they don't type something.com. You know, they don't type techguylabs.com.
Right.
They just type techguylabs, maybe even three words. And the first result will be techguylabs.com. And and if you type Yahoo, I think it even just takes you to Yahoo. I think there's certain things that Google just goes, okay, yeah, I know what you want. You know, you don't want me.
They've taken over.
You want Yahoo. Do you think computers go, do you think they sigh?
You didn't want me, Google. You wanted Yahoo.
Another Yahoo. I wish they did.
I can't remember the last time I looked for Yahoo, though.
Well, nobody. You know, Yahoo's new name is Oath.
Oath. And isn't Google like Alphabet or AB?
Google's Alphabet. That I understand because they have, you know, different companies with different letters.
Oath.
Oath, I don't know if they must have paid millions of dollars for a branding company. You know, they don't just do the companies like that. They don't just change the name.
Yeah.
They spend a lot of money seeing what it means in 18 different languages and if they can get the. And they came up with Oath.
And they have to do a logo and.
Oath.
Yeah, it costs a lot of money.
Yeah, I mean, still, if you go to yahoo.com, you still get Yahoo, but the company that owns Yahoo, which is owned by Verizon, is called Oath.
I hadn't heard that.
I just think that's the. I can't imagine a worse name. I can't even say it right. Oath. So you've been
like
answering.
Barcelona.
Now I'm stuck. You've been answering phones for some time now, and you've produced some callers for me.
I wish I could integrate that in this one, but I don't know if I can do
it's
it.
Okay.
Johnny in Atlanta?
Atlanta. Hotlanta.
He just wants to give Microsoft a shout out because they had good customer service with his issue, and that doesn't happen.
I like that. In fact, I love it when people call. Thank you, Kim, with you know, happy tales about computing because so often we don't. Johnny in Atlanta, you're next. Hi, Johnny.
Hey, Leo. How are you today?
I'm very well.
Hey,
how are you?
First time caller. I really love your show.
Thank you.
Interesting how you start. How you started this show off talking about Microsoft Surface. I have a I'm a software developer.
Ah.
And I primarily develop with using Microsoft products, mainly Visual Studio and stuff. And so I have a Surface that I booked that I purchased in January of 2016.
Nice.
And I've been very happy with it. And it's been great. However, about a couple of months ago, I started getting yellow blotches around the screen.
Right.
And so I took it into the local Microsoft store, and they said, your battery's expanding.
Oh, that's bad. Kind of that can happen.
With all those.
Yeah, lithium ion batteries sometimes will do that. And when they do, that's very dangerous.
So that kind of freaked me out with all the Samsung Note issues. So anyway, he tried at this Microsoft store. He wanted to go ahead and give me like a $600 credit. And sell me a new Surface laptops.
No.
They should fix
your laptop.
Exactly. So I brought it back, and I staged another machine in the computer in the meantime, so that I could continue, with because I'm an independent consultant. And ended up calling Microsoft about a week later, and I got a really good.
So when you took it to the Microsoft store, they didn't say, "Oh, here, give it to us. Let's fix it."
Well, he went to the back, and he said, let me see what I can do for you. And again, the warranty had expired.
Doesn't matter. That's an actual hazard. That is, the Samsung Galaxy Notes that started bursting into flames, that's why. They had too much battery and too little of a case. They expanded and exploded. And anytime you see warping caused by a lithium-ion battery swelling, that's an immediate cause for replacement. And this is why Consumer Reports dinged them, because that's not good. And if a large percentage of owners reported that, that would be a serious issue. I have a Surface Book. Fortunately, that has not happened to me. So what did they do then? So they didn't replace it. What did they do? Did they say, good luck to you? Thanks for bringing it in?
Well, he tried to tell me what my trade-in value was. He said, now, this is today. The change, so I was a little upset, and I said, well, this is my livelihood.
He didn't say, we will fix this?
He said they would send it off to Microsoft.
Okay.
And that it would probably cost me $600.
Oh, my gosh. That's
so anyway, Leo, so I wasn't ready to make the decision. So I brought it home.
You.
And in the meantime, I had to make sure I had another computer to develop with. And I waited about a week before I called Microsoft support desk, and I got someone who seemed very concerned, and he said, listen, he says, this needs to be replaced, and he said, I'm going to do what I can to replace it for free.
Good.
And so he got a lot of detail for me, and one thing is, I don't travel much with my my Surface Book, so there wasn't a lot of, stuff that I contributed. Mainly sits on my desk. In fact, I have a couple of pictures of it I can share on the chat room if I need to, but anyway, when I was talking to technicians, I noticed that the screen had started to bow out from the back. You could actually look behind the screen.
I know you're calling to say nice things about Microsoft. But,
I know.
But this,
I know.
This is not.
He said, we're going to.
It was just barely 1 year old, right? The Surface Book came out almost a year ago. I mean, it.
It was a year and a half.
Okay.
So they said, we're going to get another one to you. We'll get a support representative in contact with you next week. And so they did. This past week, they got in contact with me. They sent it out Wednesday. I got it yesterday.
Finally.
No charge. Now, they told me not to ship the old one back until I get special.
That's right. It's dangerous. That's a bomb.
Is that what I've got in my house, a bomb here?
Yeah. Put it out in the garage, not near the car. Put it somewhere away from the house. I mean, don't charge it, I guess, is the bottom line. Shouldn't have any more problems if you don't put more juice into it. But holy cow. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Holy cow. Well, I'm glad they should replace that, because that's a hazard. Somebody in the chat room saying, I walked into an Apple store with a 3-year-old iPod, and I was, for some other reason, and they happened to notice the iPod was swelling. They replaced it on the spot. Companies should do that, because that's hazardous.
Well, I've got this guy's card, and I may go back to the Microsoft store and just say, hey, how come y'all didn't volunteer to do this?
That's,
right away.
Yeah, I mean, I guess technically, it's a 1-year warranty, and anything that happens after that, hey, we're not responsible. But when it's a hazard like that, now you're just confirming Consumer Reports. I know the guy was nice to you on the phone, and I think that's, by the way, one of the things the chat room is saying, it sounds like you're in there, is you're generally going to get better results by calling than you are by going to the store.
Well, I mean, that was a tough lesson to learn. But yeah, they were, I do want to give them a plug, but I was a little upset that this happened so quickly. This has got all the bells and whistles on it, so it's not one of the cheaper ones.
They're expensive. I bought one too, and I like it. It didn't work at first. The battery issues were bad at first. That's the one where Microsoft said, this is because of Skylake, and this is, they said, a tough computer science problem. And it took them about 8 months to get the firmware so that it was reliable. But now, that's not a swelling battery. And by the way, that could happen to anybody. I don't ding them for that. Lithium-ion batteries, that's kind of one of the nature of them. But I ding them for not taking it seriously. That guy, I don't know if he'll – maybe write a letter to Microsoft saying, I just want you to know what went down here.
Yeah, well, I'm glad they stepped to the plate.
Yeah.
And definitely replaced.
Well, that's the right – and they did the right thing. Yeah, it just shouldn't have taken you that long to get them to do the right thing.
Because this would have been my last Microsoft product had they not stopped.
Well, these things happen. It's not – again, it's not that they a defect. It's how they handle the defect. And even after a year and a half, a swelling battery is a bad thing. And then the screens – did it swell or what happened there? Oh, it has a battery behind the screen on that one.
He told me at the store it was going to swell, and then it finally just, that little black bevel or whatever just started popping out in the back.
Yeah, because that, I forgot, but the Surface has two batteries, one in the keyboard and one behind the screen, because that way it can be a tablet, the Surface Book.
Yeah, here is, I will, in the chat room, I'm Techie Bud. There's the link to pictures if you want to see it.
Yeah.
You'll see what it looked like. It was really bowing out.
That is really wrong. That is not.
Like I said, hopefully any listener that got this Surface Book and has the problem, I hope this works.
Any device, if you get a swelling battery, immediately take it in. And if they won't fix it, don't use it, nevertheless.
Okay. Well, yeah. I guess I'm glad I had a happy ending.
Yes.
Quick question before we go back on the air here.
Yeah.
Are you going to give a review on your new Sony A9 camera?
Yeah, I'll tell you the review. I can give you a review right now.
Okay.
So the pros and cons, it's really expensive. It's a $5,000 body.
Right.
And Sony has very limited lenses that you would want to use with that, because you really want to use the best lenses, the G Master lenses. The people who need this camera are people who need very, very, very fast and effective focusing, particularly servo tracking focusing. You can put it in eye focus, and as the person moves around, it remains in perfect focus. It also has a super high frame rate burst mode, 20 frames per second. That's what you buy it for. It's a lower megapixels and lower dynamic range than the A7 R2. So I wouldn't say it's necessarily a direct upgrade for the A7 R2. It is a side grade that gives you some additional features if what you need is superb focusing and frame rate. But it's somewhat lower megapixels, somewhat lower dynamic range than the A7 R2. And really, it's a very expensive system, because not only do you have to buy the body, but you've got to buy their GM lenses, which are start at $1,000. In other words, get the A7 R2 unless you really know you need it. Okay, got to run.
All right, thanks, Leo.
Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. I probably should do a review, a fuller review at some point. Scott Wilkinson is here, a man who is full of sound and vision. I can't say that, can I? That's a trademark. He is an AV expert, both audio and video, and he is the editor-in-chief at the AVS Forum, avsforum.com, host of our fabulous Home Theater Geek podcast, twit.tv/HTG. Hi, Scott.
Hey, Leo. Boy, we had a great podcast this week. Bob Carver. Do you remember
the Carver?
The Carver of Carver Amps and so on. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember in college, my buddy had a Bose 901 direct reflecting speakers attached to a Carver amp.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, that's the best. It's the best you can get, he said. So is Carver still making amps?
He is. He now has his own company, Bob Carver Corporation. He sold Sunfire some years ago. That was his last big company. And he's making tube amps. He has always been a big tube amp guy.
Yeah.
And so we talk a lot about tubes and the advantages and you know, the disadvantages.
You know what the advantage is? He can make a lot of money selling tube amps. Right? Right?
Well, yeah, yeah, that's true.
But, I mean, if people hear the difference, like what they say, it's a little warmer, right? A little
it's warmer.
Smoother. Yeah. Smooth sound.
Yes, exactly.
I don't hear the difference, but I'm deaf, so I know it doesn't count. One of our chatters... Anyway. Florida dude says he's listening to this show through a Carver amp. Do I sound smooth, Florida dude? I'm smooth.
I'm so smooth. Smooth.
Did they not? Were all their amps tube amps? Did they not make a solid
state? Bob has made solid state amps.
That's what I thought. I feel like that
in
Carver.
In the phase linear days.
Phase linear, yes.
Yep. Yeah, he designed the phase linear amps, and those were all solid state. But as he said on my show this week, he just loves tubes. Not only does he like the sound of them, he likes the way they look.
Oh, I love that. I agree with him on
because you know, they light up. They're like light bulbs.
And his amps, you see the tubes. They don't hide the
exactly.
tubes.
Exactly. Right,
the tubes are right front and forward.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, he likes their visual aesthetic as much as the sound.
Is anybody still making these tubes, though?
Yes. And I asked him about that, too. And he said, you know, there was a time when it was very difficult. But the Russians, for example, are masters of making vacuum tubes. And now that there's sort of
a surprise. They're still making vacuum tubes. We used to do it in the old Chernobyl plant. But now we move it down the river.
He says he said the Russian military still uses them.
Of course they do. Frankly, to be fair, probably our air traffic control system uses a few as well. I don't know.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Cathode ray tubes for those radar displays, if nothing else. Well, right, that's cool. Right. So that's if you want to hear that, go to twit.tv/HTG. But you also link to it on your website.
On ABS Forum.
Forum.com. Yeah.
Yep.
So what's exactly new in home theater these days?
Well, we were talking last week about high dynamic range.
Yes.
Remember that?
I think that was a good conversation. Yes.
Yes. And in fact, Mike in Newark in the chat room is asking, is it worth waiting for a Dolby Vision TV? And this is what I was going to talk about today, was that there are several flavors of high dynamic range. Remember from last week, dynamic range is the difference between basically black and white on a TV. How bright can it get? How dark can it get?
Right.
And high dynamic range gives you a greater range than we're used to in broadcast TV or Blu-ray or almost anything else. And this is the new big thing, and I think it's really, really important, much more so than 4K resolution. So there are a couple of several different flavors of HDR, and some people would go, oh, man, another format war? Are you kidding me? No, it's not that. It's like Dolby Digital and DTS sound. You can't buy a receiver today that doesn't do both Dolby Digital and DTS and a bunch of others. Same thing with HDR. You can get TVs now that understand and decode properly several different flavors of HDR. The most common one currently is called HDR10. And it is used on virtually all UHD Blu-ray discs and most HDR streaming from Netflix, Amazon, and Vudu are the three main ones. The other major type of HDR is called Dolby Vision, and it's obviously from Dolby. HDR 10 is an open standard. Anyone can use it. Doesn't cost anything. Dolby Vision, of course, is proprietary, and they charge a licensing fee. So it isn't as prevalent, but it is superior.
How is it superior? In what way is it better?
Well, the reason is kind of technical, but I'll try to explain it simply. In HDR 10, the problem is in SDR, you had the mastering monitor where the content was created and the consumer display where the content was displayed. They both behaved in the same. They had the same peak brightness and the same color range and so on. With HDR, the characteristics or performance of the mastering monitor where the content is created and the consumer display where it's displayed are not necessarily the same. There's a wide variety of capabilities. And so you have to kind of map one to the other, and that's a process called tone mapping. And HDR10, basically all HDR signals have a little piece of metadata that says, here's what the mastering display was. So consumer display, adjust yourself accordingly, depending on your own capabilities. HDR10 has a very small piece of metadata that applies to the entire movie, say. Dolby Vision has metadata for each scene or each frame. And so it's more data, but it more accurately reflects the characteristics of each scene. And so you get a better result. The question is, how do you get Dolby Vision? Well, there are several streaming platforms that provide content in Dolby Vision.
A player that plays it, right?
Correct.
The hardware on the other end has to support it.
That's correct. And at the moment, the only way to do that is with there's two ways. One is with a Dolby Vision capable TV, the apps within the smart TV, and all TVs are smart these days, basically, has that capability. There's one external streaming device that's compatible with Dolby Vision, and that's the Chromecast Ultra.
Oh, good. I have one of those. If you have a Cast-ready TV that's 4K, or I wonder if those are Chromecast Ultra devices, or if you have to have the external little dongle.
You have to have the external Chromecast Ultra,
wow.
I think.
Okay.
I think. But then you need a Dolby Vision capable TV, which you actually have. LG B6 OLED is Dolby Vision capable.
So LG has been Chromecast Ultra attached to it. So I would then have to find
you can get Dolby Vision.
And which streamers are using Dolby Vision?
Netflix, Amazon, and Vudu.
And are they – they're probably encoding HDR10 and Dolby Vision into the same stream.
Correct.
And choosing?
Correct.
How can you ensure that you're picking the right one?
The cool thing is that Dolby Vision is what's called a dual-layer system. And so the base layer can be HDR10. And then the enhancement layer adds the Dolby Vision extra metadata on top of it.
Really,
so if your device doesn't
– yeah. Will it automatically switch?
If your device doesn't understand, yeah, it'll automatically switch.
Cool.
If your device doesn't understand Dolby Vision, it'll just take the base layer HDR10 and deal with that.
Scott Wilkinson, ABSForum.com, and don't forget his podcast, twit.tv/HTG, joins us each week to talk about home theater. We will have more of your calls in just a little bit. 888-ASK-LEO is the number, 888-827-5536. Leo Laporte. Tech guy.
Let's see. Marsworm, have I seen the Logan Noir black and white UHD Blu-ray in HDR? No, I haven't. But you know what? That sounds like a kind of a good idea, kind of a cool thing. I guess the movie Logan in black and white and high dynamic range. Man, that could actually be super cool and even a good reference disc to look at dynamic range in the brightness sphere, so to speak, the brightness axis, as opposed to adding the color axis, which is normally there as well. That's really cool, Marsworm. I'm going to have to go look for that. Probably have to buy it. Chumley, yes, Roku sticks are low cost, $25 to $35, but they don't do HDR. The Chromecast Ultra is the only outside box that does it, and you do need an HDR TV, a Dolby Vision TV, to take full advantage of Dolby Vision. I also want to let everybody know that week after next, on Wednesday, August 23rd, we're doing a live Ask Me Anything on AVS Forum and the Ask Me Anything is about projection. So if you have any questions about projection, you can join the chat room, or rather the thread, and post your question. We have a pre-thread up on AVS now. You have to be a member of AVS in order to post a question or a comment of any sort, but it's easy and free. So I do encourage you, if you have questions about projection, the expert on this AMA is Joel Silver.
Can you stick around at the top of the hour?
Unfortunately, I can't.
Thank you, Scott. Have a great day.
My pleasure. You too. I won't be here next week.
Okay. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 888 ask Leo. I happen to like that number, 88. Back to the phones we go. Bobby, Plymouth, Massachusetts.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
Where the pilgrims landed. I'm well.
That's
how are
right.
you?
Yeah. Across the country over here.
Yeah. 1620, Plymouth Rock.
Yeah, that's right. We're having our 400th anniversary, too, in 2020.
Wow. That's kind of amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
When I was a kid, we used to go to Plymouth Plantations. That was kind of fun because
I was right near there last night, actually.
You can't go out of character. So you try to ask them questions, catch them in historical anachronisms, and they're good. They're good.
Yeah, a friend of mine used to try to get them to laugh. He'd go over there and watch them laugh and go, "What do you say, pilgrim?"
I'd laugh.
There you go.
What can I do for you today, Bobby?
Okay. I'm a hunting tech guy on my keyboard on my computer. And I looked up the other day, and I had the blue screen of death in front of me.
What version of Windows are you using?
Windows 7 Home Edition.
Okay, yeah. So the blue screen, BSOD, blue screen of death means I have something's gone so terribly wrong, I can't go on.
Right. What I did do, I downloaded a program called Blue Screen View version 1.55.
Yeah.
Nearsoft.net.
Yeah.
And it gives you the mini dump files.
Yeah. What'd you learn from those?
That it's happened more than once.
So you can't really learn much from the dump file. The dump file's intended for the software designer more than anything else.
Yeah. Yeah, so I've had my computer. I have a Lenovo desktop, and I've had it probably for like 6 or maybe 7 years now. So I'm thinking maybe it could be a hard drive issue and not a software.
Well, there's only two ways you can get a blue screen of death. Unfortunately, it does happen. In fact, it's happening more on Windows 10 than it used to on Windows 7. Windows 7 was probably the least prone to blue screens of death. But the way that happens is either because, as I said, it's an unrecoverable error. It's so bad that I just can't go on. You know, if your Internet Explorer crashes, that's fine. Internet Explorer crashes, right. but the system continues on, and that's been a big improvement, in the way Windows works since the early days. Remember Windows 95 and 98? If a program crashed, the whole system was so wobbly it could knock the whole thing over. That's why you got a lot more blue screens of death. It's roughly the same on Macintosh as well. They call them kernel panics, but it's the same idea. It's like, I can't go on, so I'm just going to flash up something. You'll see an error message, which there's no point in paying any attention to. It rarely has anything to do with what's going on, although sometimes. And then it dumps memory. That's what you're looking at. You're using a dump explorer. It dumps memory onto the hard drive and then reboots. It says, look, I can't go on, so let's just reboot. Microsoft's tried to soften the blow with the current blue screen of death, which sometimes is another color. That was one way they fixed it. Well, it's not blue anymore. They put a happy face emoticon now on it. Isn't that sweet? It's like, what is that supposed to cheer me up? The only ways you get a blue screen of death are, as you correctly point out, either a hardware error. You know, if a memory location just has stopped working, or the chip died, or something really serious, or a program that interacts with ring zero, the system, lowest level system memory goes bad. And that's usually a driver. Normal, what we call user land applications are not allowed to access that protected memory where the system's operating. And that was a big change from 95, 98 to XP and later, was protected memory kept runaway applications in the user space from knocking the whole thing down. Huge improvement. So if you get a blue screen, it means something with fairly low-level access, like a driver, or, and I hate to say this, some security software also modifies the kernel and has kernel access. So they say, the antivirus authors, well, we have to have that to protect you. But what it does is it makes the machine a lot less reliable. So those are the possible culprits. I'd look at software first. Sometimes, and that's why sometimes I usually say that error message is useless, but sometimes it is useful because it tells you where it crashed. And if that's
right.
it says
driver ATHRX Sys, which is, I believe, a network driver.
See, that's a that might be useful. It might not be. You know, computers are not so smart. When they crash, they tell you what they were doing when they crashed, but it doesn't necessarily mean what caused the crash. So I would investigate that driver. I would replace all the drivers if I were you.
Right, update them all. Yeah, because what's happening, I have 4 dates, and the latest one was the 6th of August. That was the 3rd, and then the computer behaved itself in July. It didn't do anything, and then in May, it crashed a couple of times. I did go from Verizon as my internet carrier to Xfinity, and so I have a different modem.
So here's what I would I'm looking at you know some reporting in user groups and stuff. There is a wireless driver that Windows 7 installs automatically from Atheros that can cause that crash. So again, I would say look at your drivers. You start by going to the motherboard or the system manufacturer and getting their motherboard drivers. That's the first thing, and I would look at that wireless driver and see if you can get an update. Did you recently install any hardware or add any, capability?
No, just, I got, Xfinity in the beginning of May.
Yeah, that shouldn't make any difference. That shouldn't, because, right, so, unless you're using, are you using their Wi-Fi?
Yes, I am.
Ah, so you got an Xfinity router that has Wi-Fi built in.
Right.
That shouldn't make any difference. I don't think that would change the wireless driver on your system.
Would have that problem, like. Consistently, like when they first turn on their computer, they get the blue screen. And
yeah, that's mine, a bad. Well, that's okay. So, but that doesn't mean anything. You're right. If it happened as soon as you turn on the computer, then you would definitely suspect hardware or driver. But it could be. I'll give you a scenario that would explain this. Sometimes drivers allocate memory and release it. You know, they kind of use memory as needed and release it. And if there's a flaw in the driver that forgets to release it, we call that a memory leak. And over time, it will use more and more memory until the system crashes.
Okay.
So that's just, I mean, I give you that not necessarily as something to look for, but that is an example of why these can be intermittent. They don't have to happen always at the same time.
Yeah, your advice sounds better, because I was looking at some people saying, do the system restore. I'm like, I don't want to do that. I just did. I put on LastPass on my computer and got all my accounts all squared away, so if something ever happens to me, the wife doesn't have to hunt down all the passwords for everything. You know?
Good man. I would look at, by the way, LastPass in the pro version has something called emergency access, and you can give your wife emergency access. That's what I did with my wife, and she's done with me. She doesn't get access to your passwords unless something happens to you, and then she can request it, and then they send you an email. It's a kind of like dead man switch. They send you an email saying, hey, your wife says that you're dead. Are you? And then you can set the time, you know, you can give yourself a day or two to respond. And and if you don't respond, they go, okay, here's his passwords, honey. Have fun. That I recommend everybody do that. That's actually one of the best reasons to use a password manager like LastPass. Some others do that as well. I think 1Password does that as well. It's such a great feature.
Okay. For some reason, if it was my hard drive was starting to go, I just had a quick question. Can you back up your whole drive on Carbonite?
No, and I wouldn't, because it's going to be too much data, right? You have to remember, upload it. That's one where you go out and get an external drive. And
that's what I do. I get USB, a Seagate drive.
Yeah, and Mike, Windows 7 has a image creation tool built into it that you can create an image onto that external drive. That's your entire drive. You don't even need to buy one. I'm sad to say Microsoft is deprecating that, and they're going to take it out, I think, in the fall creators update. That was a really nice feature. It was hard to find, because it was like Windows 7 in 10. It says Windows 7 type image backup, but that's a good thing. It was an image backup.
Yeah, I did find it in 7 actually. I have Acronis.
Acronis is very good too. True Image. Yeah, that's a very good.
Yeah.
Any one of those will work. Make an image of your drive. You should do that. But it's not necessarily the drive. It's much more likely. First thing I always look at: video drivers, wireless drivers, security software. If you have any security software running, uninstall it. It's one of the reasons I generally don't like to put security software in a system like antiviruses in particular, is because they hook in so low. In fact, we've even seen situations where some of the big name security antivirus programs actually open a hole that bad guys can use. They actually make your system less secure. Not just less reliable, but less secure. Isn't that terrible? But yeah, when you get a blue screen of death, that means something's pretty seriously wrong. Those are the places to look. Low-level programs, drivers, and, of course, ultimately hardware. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls coming up. Well, hey, hey, hey. How are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smartwatches. We actually will be talking tomorrow about digital photography, and I think we're going to have to get some last-minute advice from Chris Marquardt, our photo guy, on eclipse photography. We're 9 days away from the total eclipse of the sun, which will be visible in its totality across a large swath of the United States. And even if you're not in that, you know, Miss America sash that goes across the country from Washington State to Florida, you'll still see some of an eclipse. It won't be a total eclipse. Totality is pretty amazing. If you've never experienced it, it's hard not to kind of feel almost a primeval fear. Because we're not used to the sun going out in the middle of the day, and that's about when it'll be, middle of the day for a couple of minutes. And it gets dark, and the birds get quiet. You know, nature thinks it's nighttime. And you start to think, maybe we should start banging some pots and drums and scare the dragon away that's blocking the sun. We got to bring it back. The last total eclipse of the sun was some time ago. Actually, I have some audio. My studio manager is very excited about this year's total eclipse. He's going up to Washington State to view it. He has Frank Reynolds of ABC News. And when is this? It's 38 years ago. Frank Reynolds covering this. And he actually, at the end of it, he mentions the eclipse that's to come.
So that's it, the last solar eclipse to be seen on this continent in this century. And as I said, not until August 21st, 2017, will another eclipse be visible from North America. That's 38 years from now. Wow. May the shadow of the moon fall on a world at peace. And ABC News, of course.
Good luck. not any more peaceful 38 years later than it was then, was it? We will talk more about it, I'm sure, and there are lots of apps now on the iPhone and Android to help you find the total eclipse and maybe find a spot where it won't be cloudy. That's the worst thing. If you make a trip, and we did this some years ago, we went to, this was kind of nutty, went to Australia to see a total eclipse in, maybe it was 8, 9 years ago. I can't remember. No, it wasn't that long ago, maybe 7 years ago. We took a cruise ship out to the point where you would have totality. And there were a bunch of astronomers on board. It was an astronomy cruise. Very excited. I brought all my cameras, wanted to get the pictures. And it started to get dark, and this is exciting. And the captain, in what turned out to be quite an ill-advised decision, decided, well, maybe I can sail over there, and then we won't have any cloud cover at all. And he sailed right out of the eclipse. Into clouds, and that was that. We didn't, in fact, see totality. Well, I'm going to do it because you got to do it. Don't look at the sun with your bare eyes ever, 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 and you might be deceived during the partial eclipse, the beginning of the eclipse, that it's dark. I can look at the sun, and no, people, Dr. Mom in a chat room says emergency rooms in her area are already talking about how to treat people who will be sun-blinded. Even the tiniest sliver of sun is still bright enough to actually burn your retina. So don't, please, please don't look at the sun with the unaided eye. It is safe during the totality, but don't be tempted because the totality only lasts a minute or two. And then, boom, the sun comes back in full brightness. Go get some eclipse glasses. Make a pinhole camera. There are lots of ways to do it. In fact, there's an excellent website from NASA that I would recommend, 2017eclipse.nasa.gov. It'll have a map there, tell you what percentage of eclipse you'll see, where you are, where you would go if you wanted to see totality, and how to view it. They even, I think, offer glasses. It might be, you know, I think the glasses are getting in short supply. There's little paper glasses that kind of look like the glasses that Remember they used to, maybe you don't remember this. I don't even remember this. They used to hand out, I've seen pictures in the 3D movies, you know, the red gleam. They look like that, the little paper glasses, but they have very, very dark filters. In fact, you put on those glasses, you can't see a thing unless you look at the sun or something super bright. Then you'll just see a dot. Those are the glasses, and make sure they're ISO approved for eclipse viewing. But all that information is available from NASA at eclipse2017.nasa.gov. And there are other places, too. I think if you search for 2017 total eclipse, you'll find plenty of resources. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. Matt is on the line from Maine. Hello, Matt.
Hey, Leo. Wow. First time, long time. Just wanted to say that.
Good to talk to you.
You've shaped my life, I shall say.
Well, that's a scary thought.
25 years of the tech guy. I've always appreciated what you've done, and I've looked up to you at times. Your voice is always welcome in my earphone.
Oh, aren't you sweet? Thank you, Matt. I really appreciate those kind words.
Oh yeah, no, I've been meaning to call for a long time, and I picked up the phone today. I heard last week's show about the you had mentioned about a the Deco mesh router.
Yeah, that's one from TP-Link. There are quite a few of these now, but Deco's one that my friend Dave Hamilton, who's tested a lot of them, likes a lot, and it's the least expensive of the bunch.
Yes, and I did some research, and it seems to be a pretty decent unit. And I have about a 2,000 square foot house with a detached garage, and I want to upgrade from the Motorola cable modem router combo.
Oh gosh, you do, yeah. The one the cable company gives you is always the worst. And if you can go in the settings on that and disable the Wi-Fi and get your own Wi-Fi router, and I would strongly suggest that.
And I guess that's the question is, with the size of my house, I mean, should I just go get like an Asus, cable router, AC, whatever it is?
Yeah, a good AC, like the Asus AC3200, which I've used and recommended, probably be enough for a 2,000 square foot house. It's that detached garage that might be a little tricky if you wanted Wi-Fi out there. The idea of these mesh routers, well, they're twofold. One is they're multiple units. So there's the Linksys Orbi, which is two units, and then most of the rest, like the Eero and the Deco that you mentioned from TP-Link, the Velop from Linksys, the Amplify from Ubiquiti. I can go on and on. Google has their Wi-Fi, does this. Most of them, the starter packs are three units. A base unit, which takes the place of that Motorola unit as a router. You still need the Motorola unit as a cable modem, but you can disable its routing if you can get into it, and you can certainly disable Wi-Fi, connect it to the base unit of these mesh routers, just as you would to a standalone single router, the Asus, say.
Yep.
Then you place the other two units, or more, because you can add more units as you go down the road, but you'd place the other one or two units kind of equidistant between the router and the farthest place you'd want to get to. It's kind of like an extender, but it's not. And that's kind of the main point of this. They call them mesh routers because an extender, the way an extender works is once you're on the extender, you're getting half the bandwidth because it works in what we call duplex mode. It takes half of your bandwidth to talk to the base unit and half to talk to you. So your speed is diminished by 50%. These mesh units usually have a separate back channel, or at least multiple channels, multiple bands, so it doesn't impact your speed. You get full speed everywhere. They also are smarter nowadays, and so they do things like shaping. They choose channels automatically. They'll help. They'll tell your device which unit to connect to. It makes it easier. They're all the same name and password. They do a lot of things. I think they're really the next generation of routers. So, yes, in most houses, in fact, you may not even need a fancy Asus. The folks at Wirecutter recommend another TP-Link product, the Archer C7, as the best low-cost router. And for that house, it might be enough. But if you're willing to spend a little more money, in general, I like the features of mesh routers. A couple of them, including the Deco and the Eero, have filtering for malware. They allow you to control individual devices.
I would like to do that with my son.
What we do with our son. All of his devices are named. Eero does this, and I can pause his connection.
I love that.
I know. I love it, too. Believe me. A better router might be more effective for you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, but at a higher cost. Asus has its now. Asus announced its, I'm sorry, we had to take a break, but we're I'm still online with you. Asus announced its, they call it the Lyra or the Lyra, but that's also expensive. Most of these are $300 to $400 for the three units.
Yeah, and that's why the Deco, you know, for $250, I think it's even on Amazon right now, it's like $230 or something. And then, you know, or a decent router for the same price, you know, between $2 and $250. I figured, wow, maybe I should try the mesh. But one of the complaints that I keep reading about is some of the smaller Internet of Thing devices, they have trouble
staying
connected.
That's exactly right. And Dr. Mom has said that for instance, the Harmony Hub, which I talk about all the time, doesn't work well with mesh. Those issues, I believe, will be fixed. I don't think those are intractable. I think the problem is the hub and other IoT devices were designed, you know, if you get a good IoT device, if you get one, you know, some Chinese knockoff, they're never going to update the firmware on that.
Oh, no. Yeah, I got a couple Echoes, you know, because of you.
I haven't had any problem with the Echoes on any of the mesh systems, and I've tried most of them. So the Echoes don't have a problem. The reason is sometimes they get fooled by the multiple bands and the multiple channels, and they don't handle the handoff well.
But, oh, I see.
But I wouldn't worry. I wouldn't worry about that with Echoes at all, or Nests. I use Nests, Echoes, the Ring doorbell. None of these. Sorry, I wasn't talking to you, Echo. None of these have. I have to mute her. She's going to get involved in any conversation.
Oh yeah, she just loves. Somebody.
She just wants to butt right in, doesn't she?
Yeah.
I got like an email from somebody who said, can you not say the word Echo? I said, well, I don't. You say the word Echo, so I don't say the A word. He says, well, I have some with the A word and some with the Echo. And I said, well, I can't help you if you're going to use the whole space up. I got to call it something.
I'll have to call it the tube.
The tube. I need a name. Yeah, the Amazon tube.
Yeah.
Anyway, no, they work fine with the Echoes.
Awesome. Yeah, I think I'm going to give it a try then. I'm going to go on I'll try the TP-Link and
yeah, walk. Will you let me know if you get the Velop? I think at that price, the truth is, I would even the Asus 3200 is almost $250. I think so. Anything that's going to be good is going to cost you around $200. That's why that's the only exception as is Archer C7. But if you read the review, it isn't, you know, top of the line in many respects.
Yeah, I've always been a schooler. You get what you pay for, and I used to do the Consumer Report stuff, and that was always, you know, kind of low end, high value type of stuff.
Yeah.
So I'd rather spend a little bit more. And if, you know, if this is a decent mesh router, and it seems from the reviews, at least I've read on Amazon, it seems to be a pretty reliable setup. The Deco, you know. So
I am thrilled. Try it and call me back.
All right. Yeah,
let me know, because I have bought every one of these, and I'm not really up for buying yet another one. I use the new Eero's, and then I have two internet connections, so I use the Plumes on the other one. And the Orbeez I've had very good results from Linksys, but that's a dual unit setup. That's the fastest. Yeah. If speed, given your setup, you could probably get away with the Orbeez, which is a base unit and a satellite, and get the best possible speed out of all of them. So look at the Linksys Orbeez as another option. And if the price is right on that one, given that you only have 2,000 square feet, that's really enough, you know, for two units. And then the garage, how far back is the garage?
That's the thing. It's about 30 feet from the house. So, and I got a big, you know, I got a lot of acreage. And so the garage has been placed a little bit
right
to the left of the house. And I'd really like to get that, because when I'm in the garage doing projects, I'm fixing my lawnmower, I'm on YouTube. That's my manual, you know, is YouTube video.
Yeah, that's awesome. I understand that you can see everything you had ever wanted. Hey, I got to run.
Yeah,
but let me know what you do. Appreciate it. Thank you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo. Let's go on with the calls. Kathy's on the line from Laguna Niguel, California. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, Leo.
I'm so sorry, Kathy. I keep people on hold for so long that when I pick up on them, I often hear a startled sound or sound like something fell over.
Yeah, well, I was folding my laundry and my husband's coming in making noise.
I'm on the phone. What can I do? What can I do for you, Kathy?
Hey, I am a digital scrapbooker, and I have a laptop, which I use for portability, with a 17-inch screen. But I'm looking for another monitor that I can use at home that has, you know, that it's a bigger screen.
Sure. And you could probably use it with that laptop.
Yeah. The laptop's only a few months old.
Oh, gosh. Good. What kind is it?
It's MSI.
Oh, yeah. They make good laptops.
S63VR. Yeah.
So any modern laptop will have, I'm going to look at this laptop and see what the connectors are. MSI makes nice laptops. That's a good choice. And they're one of the few that continues to make 17-inch screens. So that's nice, too. But what you'll need if you want to use an external monitor is a is a port on the laptop.
Yeah.
And I'm going to guess it has an HDMI port, which would be probably the easiest thing to do. It looks like they have something they call, I'm curious about this, matrix display, multitask with up to three monitors.
All right.
So that's nice. So this this device supports, and it's because it's kind of for gamers. It's a very nice system. So you can.
I'm really happy with it.
Yeah, you can have two external monitors if you wanted.
I got it at Best Buy, and you know, when you walk out of that store, they check your merchandise, and the guy looked at me and looked at my merchandise, and then he said, "Are you a gamer?" I said, "No, but I do
scrapbooking. It's very challenging."
I do. Well, I work with a lot of graphics.
Sure. No. Hey. Good choice. This is a very nice laptop. You spend some money on it, but because you got it at Best Buy, you also get a very good return policy, which I think is one of the good reasons to get it at Best Buy. So I'm looking at the chassis. You do have an HDMI port, a full size HDMI port. That means you pretty much have, you know, the world is your oyster, so to speak. Which I've never understood that saying, because that's kind of disgusting. But anyway, if you really like oysters, that means almost any display that you can get will have HDMI. All the modern displays have HDMI in. So that's going to
be my question. My question is, where I plan to put it, I will be sitting about, I could be sitting as much as 25 inches away, or I could move it a little closer. And
that's fine.
So what's the best monitor size?
And I would get if I were you, and I would get a 27 inch monitor. I would not stint, and I would go to Dell. Makes very affordable, but very nice monitors. Because you're scrapbooking, probably the color quality is important, right?
Very important. And also I need it to have, I don't know if this is aspect ratio or what, but I need it to be able to project a two-page spread.
Yes. That means you want
one of height.
You want one of these wide monitors.
Exactly.
Yeah. They actually make, Dell and Asus and a few other companies make extremely wide monitors. Gamers love those. You'll pay a higher price for those, but it gives you a lot of resolution. They're 1440 from top to bottom, which is more than high def. And it's like
that's
one
of the resolution.
Yeah, that's the resolution. 1440 from top to bottom, but the width is more than 3000. So they're like very wide monitors, and they look like a widescreen TV. That would be very nice. That would be, those are the 21x9 monitors. That would be a very nice choice for you. Now, it really is budget dependent, but I would go to look at Dell monitors. Those are the ones I like. My son has one of the widescreen Dell monitors for his gaming rig.
And what did you mean by 21x9?
So they're super wide. Dell's, actually, you know, I'm looking at these.
That's the aspect ratio?
Yeah, they're super wide, which means you're going to get more. They're 34-inch monitors, but that's deceptive because of the aspect ratio. They're no taller than a regular 27-inch monitor. They're just longer. They're wider. And they're well under $1,000. They have $799, $879. I would get, you know, if you can afford it, get the better quality because the color reproduction will be better on those.
Mm-hmm.
But and they're slightly curved, which is awesome. That means you know, you're gonna love these for scrapbooking, for watching movies, for whatever. Gamers love them because they give you so they're 34 inches diagonal, and I think that's for what we call two up, which
the
is
the only thing that's That's a little steep for my budget.
Oh, okay. They have a less expensive. They have a $259 one, I believe, as well. But it's not the super wide. It's just a 27.
Okay.
But Dell, for the price, I think gives you the best bang for your buck. So I like the Dells. They have an ultra sharp 24-inch monitor for $259. That would certainly be adequate for what you want to do. Okay.
Okay.
Hey, have a good time scrapbooking. You got a heck of a system. Scooter X has just passed along to me. We always mention the wire cutter because I love the wire cutter. And they have a review of 27-inch monitors. See if you could find one in there $500, does that sound? Is that within your budget?
I was hoping.
Go to Dell.
100 or less.
Yeah, then go to Dell. 100
or less.
Go to Dell for the 24-inch. They said.
Okay, is wire cutter? That's a review.
Yeah, the wire. We'll put it in the show notes at techguylabs.com or go to thewirecutter.com. They recommend as the best 27-inch, but it's $500. The HP Z27N.
Okay.
So that's a factory calibrated display. That means it's got good pictures. That's 2560 by 1440. So that's big enough to do two up. And you can adjust the height. There's certainly many choices out there. The good news is monitor costs have plummeted. And I think that's a very good use for a laptop. Now, one more thing I'm going to suggest you get. It's funny, I just got one on Amazon. It wasn't very expensive. That laptop's going to get pretty hot. And it'd be nice to put it on a little bit of a raised stand to give it more airflow underneath.
Oh,
but they're not expensive. I got one that's made out of bamboo. And it was like $12 or something. And it has two fans that plug into the USB port. So it's active cooling. And that will make a big difference in both the reliability and the long-term stability of that laptop. Let me see if I can find the name of it. It's actually kind of cool. It's bamboo with two fans underneath. I'll put a link in the show notes.
Okay.
It was $21.99, and I got it because it can't hurt. Plus, it's kind of cool looking. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Non-slip laptop cooler with a portable healthy tray. I don't know what that is. I don't know what the portable healthy tray is. What does that mean? There's plenty of these. You go on eBay, you can get them for $5, but I thought this one was kind of cool. You get a 5-fan on eBay for $13. Oh, here's an LG. Good. Let's put that in the show notes. Thank you, Beatmaster. Here's an LG, one of the 34s. It's not going to have the best color reproduction, but this is very affordable, $399. That's still a little over a price point. I love these ultra wides. I really do. I'm very jealous. Lisa in her office here and Michael, her son, in his gaming system have these, and they're just great looking. Just great looking. We have the we have an Asus, I think, and a Dell. He's traveled everywhere, man. He's Johnny Jett, our travel guru, joins us every week to talk about traveling better through technology. Hi, Johnny Jett.
Hello, Leo.
You are somewhere with mountains. It looks like a kind of a rustic, but beautiful, but like a California. A craftsman-looking room. Where are you?
I'm at the Ritz-Carlton Bachelor's Gulch in Beaver Creek, Colorado.
Sweet. Are you skiing?
No, but you know what? I was shocked. I was down at the Beaver Creek Square, and they have an ice rink outdoor ice rink.
Sure, why not? Actually, is that a travel tip?
Cold.
If you go to ski resorts in the summer, do you get a better deal? I bet you would. And they're very nice, right?
A lot of the ski resorts are actually more popular in the summertime.
Oh, never mind.
I don't think that's the case.
Because they're beautiful, right? You can't ski, but they're beautiful areas and nice hotels.
For sure. I mean, there's beautiful hiking, mountain biking, canoeing, whitewater river rafting. I can't even speak.
Whitewater river rafting.
Rafting. Say that five times fast.
Whitewater rafting. So, hello.
Yeah.
So, what do we have today? What's on the docket?
So, you know, you're talking about renting a car possibly or getting an Uber. So this week I actually have both. So a couple weeks ago, Natalie and I flew and Jack flew up to Seattle and we were really impressed. Have you been to the Seattle airport? We're impressed how they do the card sharing. Yeah. But if you've gotten an Uber or a Lyft out of there, you know, it's so organized. I wish every airport was like that. I mean, the Uber driver tells you what row they're in, what stall number. So there's no like going out in the curb trying to find.
Oh, that's nice. I like that.
It's beautiful the way they do it. But I noticed that it said, you know, for Uber, Lyft, and Wings, go here. And I was like, I never even heard of Wings. Have you?
No.
So W-I-N-G-Z. So I did some research on it. And actually, it turns out they're pretty popular. They've been around since 2015.
Wings.me, W-I-N-G-Z.me.
And what makes them different from Uber and Lyft is that, first of all, they don't do surge pricing. So if you pre-book and you can pre-book, that price stays the same. It's a little bit more expensive than the others. But if you happen to do it a lot and you like a certain driver, you can request the same driver over and over, which I really like. And the fact that they don't surge.
You know, I found out why Uber is so inexpensive most of the time. They subsidize that ride. It costs them 59 cents on the dollar. You're only paying 41% of the actual cost, which is how Uber loses billions every year.
Right, and they're just banking on.
They're hoping to get customers.
Take over the taxi, and then they're just going to start surging people.
Right. So Wings is available everywhere or only in certain?
No, there are 14 cities, 23 airports.
Okay.
So Austin, Dallas, SeaTac, Houston, LA, all the LA airports.
Okay.
Including John Wayne, where you're going, Miami, Orlando, Phoenix. So they're great. I mean, it looks. I've put a post out, and people are writing back. I love them. And you know,
but otherwise, it's like Uber. A guy comes, he picks. It's like a cab.
It is.
I bet you 80% of our listeners have never tried one of these ride sharing. Can you tell us why is it better or worse? Why is it different than just taking a cab?
Well, I love it so much better.
It's like taking a cab, though, right?
It's like taking a cab, except usually you have more legroom. The cars are cleaner. The drivers are friendlier because you have to rate them. That's my big thing. And they're also a lot cheaper, as you just said. They subsidize it.
Right.
So,
sometimes.
Know, in L.A.,
surge pricing,
not like taking taxis in L.A. or New York.
Surge pricing is one of the things Uber does that everybody hates. When it rains in New York City and everybody's trying to get an Uber, they raise the prices by quite a bit. They'll tell you, of course, ahead of time. But because they say, well, there's more demand. We price it according to demand, which cabs never do. They're not allowed to do.
Right. Especially on New Year's Eve. That's when they really go up.
Yeah.
You know, they'll do a ridiculous amount of money. But, you know, I've rarely had any bad experiences with taking Uber and UberX. And I've ordered 500, probably 200 for my dad alone. I do it remotely around the world.
The other day I was in a shop and the guy says, can you call me an Uber? And people had to explain him, no, that's not – don't you have the Uber app? He said, well, I don't have a smartphone. He said, well, Uber is no good for you. Because you can't just – I don't think you can call an Uber.
Unless you have Alexa, then you can ask her to book it.
Well, but you have to have the app. You have to have an account. You have to have a credit card set up. And you use the app to call the car. And by the way, there's different grades of service. It started with a black car, which is kind of like a limo, you know. But it's not. But it's a higher, you know, quality car. Sometimes it's an SUV. And then they have Uber X, which is it can be, you know, a lesser car, right? And the
it's
driver
just like someone picking up in like a Toyota,
it's like a buddy
or a
picking
Prius.
Up. But there's other Uber, like there's even like there's different grades of service, and they cost less, obviously.
Yeah,
but
the Uber XL, bigger ones,
big giant, and that's a Chris Christie car. It's a bigger car, and then then the app will tell you, you know, how much it's going to cost. Where and you have to tell the app before you go where you're going. It'll show you the name and the picture of the driver, auto license plate. So it's kind of and Lyft is roughly similar. And I guess Wings is similar.
It is.
It's an Uber competitor.
Although what they say is that they require each driver to submit a DMV to a DMV criminal and fingerprinted background check before joining the team. So
good.
I think it's a little bit more extensive than Uber. I think Lyft is better than Uber in that sense.
Uber and Lyft can't operate in Austin, Texas because they refused to do that. They said, well, no, we're not going to pay for
it. These guys are in Austin.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Wings is in Austin.
That was the deal, yeah.
According to their website.
Yep. All right. Wings, W-I-N-Z or Z.
And by, And one quick tip, by the way, with Uber, you talk about surging. So if you do see the price surging, what I usually do is I usually wait a few minutes and keep checking back. And, you know, it could take you 5, 10 minutes or even 15, but it usually goes back down.
Okay. Okay.
So you will save money.
Surging, as the name implies, comes and goes. Yes.
We got time for another site? All right. So I know a month ago I mentioned a website where you can rent other people's cars. Well, here's another one that you can do it, my buddy actually came up with it. Dan Nannan, he's a big fan of your show.
Oh, I know Dan. He's the tech comedian.
Professional comedian. Yeah. Yes. So he writes guest posts for my site a lot.
Oh, I love Dan.
He has a Tesla like you, and he just wrote, you know, when he travels, he rents Teslas. He likes to rent a Tesla.
I know.
He goes through this site, Turo.com, T-U-R-O. And because it's so much cheaper, he gets Teslas for $79 a day.
So their tag is rent better cars. They're not just Teslas. They're other kinds of cars.
Yeah, too. You can get a Ferrari. You can get a Honda.
You can get a Polaris Slingshot for $92 a day if you're really insane. Look at that.
Yeah.
That's a three-wheeled trike.
And Dan even rents his own car on here, his Tesla out, because he lives in New York City. He's like, why should I just keep
it's
it
cheaper
in
than parking? Yeah.
And he makes $100 a day renting out his car.
That's hysterical. That's so funny.
And you get to set the insurance level that you want, where you're going to drop off, pick up, things like that.
You can get a Volkswagen Jetta for $45 or a Maserati Quattroporte for $154 a day. That's pretty good deal.
It's not bad. You know,
I don't know if these are all better cars.
No. But last week I mentioned a site called AutoSlash, and I used them again this week for Denver. I flew to Denver yesterday, and I found a car, national car rental, for $45 a day. And I walked up, and they said they're going for $145 as a walk-up. And I was like, wow, this is a really good deal. So, you know, there's different sites you need to check. So this is just one of them that you should check, Turo.com.
Turo, yeah.
AutoSlash is another. Priceline. And so actually AutoSlash uses Priceline, and that's where they get it from, the deals. But they use a corporate code, which makes it cheaper.
Johnny Jet. You don't need a corporate code. You just need to go to johnnyjet.com, sign up for his travels, deals, newsletter. You'll travel like a rock star. He's got all sorts of stuff there. Read the great articles. Follow him on Twitter at johnnyjet, Instagram too.
And sign up to the newsletter.
Those newsletters are – get the newsletter if you do nothing else. johnnyjet.com, and we'll see you next week. Safe travels, Johnny.
Thank you.
Johnny showed me his hotel room, and I asked, is your family with you? And he showed me the hotel room, and yes.
Yes,
they're here. With you.
It's like the Tasmanian devil ran through.
Love to the fam. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, it's good though. You know what? It's good. It's good. Yeah. It's a good life when you have that. That's awesome.
It's so much fun traveling with this guy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good life. I like this song. I bought the album though cuz I really like this song. I didn't like anything else in the album. That's in the old days when a record company could put one hit on an album and then fill it with whatever else the band had lying around and sell it. And they got really mad because Apple came along and said, you know, I bet people would buy the single. And the record company said, no way, that you can't do that because then we won't get our album revenues. Well, the rest is history. 8888 Ask Leo, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thank you to Michael Cozio, our musical director, who is very good at, do they still call it spinning the discs? Yeah, there's no discs. He's pushing a button, but he's very good at it. I guess DJs still use discs, right? That's not gone away. Phone number 8888 Ask Leo, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. John on the line from Santa Monica, California, our next call. Hi, John.
Hi there.
Thanks for hanging on. What can I do for you?
No problem. I love your show, by the way.
Thank you.
Always wondering if there is an app that you can have on your phone in which you can only be called by people in your contact list.
Now, oh, I love that idea, right?
It's the opposite of a blacklist, I guess.
It's a whitelist. They call it a whitelist.
Yeah.
And it's a well-known technique both for spam fight. There's all sorts of reasons people use whitelisting, and I think it's a great idea for phones. Nowadays, on our cell phones, we are bombarded with spam calls, so much so that the major carriers in the U.S. now have apps or they build it into their contacts that'll say suspected spam. And when I see that, I want to say, why'd you let it through? Why didn't you just stop it if it's spam?
Exactly.
But,
And I'm just a graphic designer. I use Macs all the time. If I can think of it, why didn't anybody else? Or they should. Someone out there, do it. Please, please, please.
Well, Google Voice does it. That's one free solution that I use that does it. Now, the problem with that is you're going to have a new number.
Okay.
I think you could port your number to Google Voice. I don't know. I'll have to check on that. But let's say you get a new number. I did. In fact, I did this years ago because I wanted one number. Google Voice has many advantages besides being free. And I tell you what, there are companies that do this that paid. And given that Google sometimes abandons its free products, maybe you should go to Grasshopper or somewhere else that, you know, RingCentral, somewhere that does it for a small fee. But for the time being, Google Voice. Here's why I got it originally, because it will ring one number that you give out. It's a Google Voice number. It'll ring up to five phones. So it can home phone, cell phone, work phone, whatever, all will ring when somebody calls that one number. But you can also use your Google contacts and manage it. So you can say, if this person is in my contact list, ring them through. If this person is not in my contact list, make them identify themselves before you ring them through, or send them straight to voicemail, or block them entirely. So it has whitelisting, in other words. You can say,
okay,
only people in my contact list. And it worked for me, and I bet you your contact list is on Google, right? No.
Yeah, I think it is.
Yeah. Most people just sync with Google. It's kind of built into the iPhone and Android phones.
Yeah.
There are third-party tools, just as you suggest. Android, for instance, will allow you in the app to block unknown phone. Well, I don't know if it's unknown phone numbers or individual phone numbers. The individual phone numbers is actually a feature of the carrier. You know, they have a block feature.
Well, I got an iPhone, so I
don't think
to be on an iPhone.
Yeah. Well, this is the beauty. The other reason I actually like using Google Voice is I can give out that number. In fact, I use that number in my email signature. You know, it's on the air. Everybody knows that number. But because I have such good control of it, I don't ever have to worry about it. You know, when somebody calls
that's wonderful.
Yeah, isn't that nice? So I don't worry about my number leaking out. I keep the cell phone numbers private. Nobody knows my cell phone. Even my family doesn't really know my cell phone number.
Well, that's because you're a big star, so.
Well, I'm not, but thank you. It's very kind of you to say so. But it's true for everybody. We're all being plagued by these telemarketers now.
Yeah.
And I think my first response would be Google Voice, but there are I don't know about – see, there won't be any app on the iPhone because Apple will not let third-party developers get access to that low-level information. So, you can turn on Do Not Disturb, but this isn't much of a solution. If you have Do Not Disturb, there's a setting that says, well, if somebody calls twice in a row, let them through. So you could tell your close contacts, call me twice, and then my phone will ring.
That's a solution.
That's not a bad solution. So that's the iOS Do Not Disturb function. You should look at that.
Okay. I've never looked at that before.
Yeah. That's kind of handy because Do Not Disturb can be on a schedule or it can be on all the time. There's manual and scheduled. You can allow calls from favorites or all contacts. Actually, you know what? It will do exactly what you want. Allow calls from all contacts and then block the rest. If you turned on, yeah, holy cow!
I
should have looked at the settings. So I knew that you could say allow calls from favorites, but that's a limited number. That's like 6 to 10 people. But no, you can even allow calls from. This is iOS 10, all contacts, or you can create a group in your contacts list and say these are the people who are allowed to call me.
Oh wow!
Isn't that awesome? Well. And then just turn on Do Not Disturb. And while Do Not Disturb is enabled, calls and alerts that arrive while locked will be silenced, and a moon icon will appear in the status bar.
See, this is what we need, Julio, because I never would have figured that out.
Well, I wouldn't either. I thank the chat room for saying, you know, you could do that. I didn't know that that could do that. So that's nice. Nice feature.
All right. Yeah, perfect.
Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. I still would say look at Google Voice because it is free. and it has a lot of nice features to it. There's a third-party program on Android. Oh, Truecaller. I have actually used that. I like Truecaller. It's from like a – I think it's Norwegian. There's a Scandinavian company. And what's nice about Truecaller is they keep and maintain a database of spam numbers. So Truecaller will really give you some control over those things. Here's the problem with this lately. Phone spammers, you know, spam is insidious. It's like water. It just gets everywhere. It's like sand, really fine sand. And so what they do now is they just randomly, they change the number every time. So there's no way you can block by number because the number's never the same. It's always some random number. And their favorite tool, which drives me absolutely bonkers, is this what we call neighbor spam or neighbor spoofing, where they choose a number that's in your area code. Sometimes they even choose a number that happens in Canada too. They do that in Canada. We have some Canadian visitors. Sometimes they also use I should have shown you my Justin Trudeau t-shirt. I have it somewhere. Bare-chested on a horse with a polar bear and a moose. Anyway, sorry, got distracted. The neighbor spoofing, they spoof your area code, or sometimes they'll even spoof your area code in your exchange. And then it really looks like, oh, this must be somebody from my, you know, my hood or my family. Maybe the school is calling and, you know, my son is sick or something like that. And so you're going to be more likely to answer those. And every time, they get me every time. Hello. Did you know you could save money on your click? It just drives me crazy. Ah, we've come to the end of hour number two of the Tech Guy Extravaganza, but the gags and laughs continue when we come back after the news at the top of the hour. 8888 Ask Leo, the website, techguylabs.com. More of your calls right after this. You stayed at one of our resorts. That's one. Yep. No, I didn't. Yes, you did. Hey, let me talk a little bit about our sponsor, WordPress.com. That's where my website, if you go to leolaporte.com, that's running on WordPress. If you go to, gosh, so many sites nowadays are running on WordPress. WordPress.com. They power some of the biggest sites in the world, some of the smallest, like mine. They are just the best. And by the way, I got to tell you, I've been a WordPress fan for years, and it's so great being on WordPress. They treat me like a king. If you go to wordpress.com/techguy, we can save you 15% off any new plan purchase. There's a reason that 28% of all websites, 28%, more than a quarter, 28% of all websites run on WordPress. WordPress. It's the best. WordPress.com. They've got a VIP platform. USA Today uses it. New York Post uses it. But you get all the benefits of that. Alaska Airlines uses it. But you get all the benefits of it. As a user, the best tech support in the nation, WordPress.com. Choose from hundreds of beautiful designs. Whether it's your personal blog or your business, you got to check out WordPress.com. Makes it easy for your customers to find you, to connect with you. One of the things I love about WordPress is it's a community. So they, you know, when they feature you, as they have for me, which is nice, on the front page, people follow you on WordPress.com. I have 500,000 followers. That means you get more traffic. You get great stats. You learn so much about what people like and don't like. I want you to check it out. 15% off a brand new site when you go to WordPress.com/techguy. WordPress.com/techguy. We thank him so much for making my site possible and making it easy for you and more affordable to create your new site. Register a domain or bring your own. Choose from hundreds of themes. Make a brilliant site. Easy. You don't need to be a web guru. WordPress.com/techguy.
Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smartwatches and augmented reality and virtual reality, self-driving cars and gadgets. The Gizwiz coming up later this hour. Dick DiBartolo, he's Mad Magazine's maddest writer. He's been so for 50-plus years, five decades. In his sixth decade doing that, but he's also like this crazy gadget hound, and he joins us every week with a fun or unusual or sometimes actually useful gadget. He'll be doing that later in the hour, but I'm going to take calls like crazy this hour. I feel bad. I've got so many people holding on. Let's get right back to the phones. Chuck in Pacoima, California. Hello, Chuck.
Hello, Leo.
How are you today?
Well, I am wonderful now that I finally got there after two Bondo breaks, two cigars.
I know.
Good to go.
This was a two-cigar hold? Wow. were they, I'm hoping they were just the little ones, not the Maduro big ones.
No, they're kind of in between.
All right. I hate to keep you on hold that long. I apologize. What can I do for you?
Well, I made a big mistake, and I changed landline and internet providers. And I had been solicited by this one company for a couple of years, and I was grandfathered into I don't know if we can use names on.
Sure, I love it when you name names. I love it. Let's put them on the spot.
There we go. Okay. I was a loyal Verizon landline user.
Oh, and then Frontier took over.
Yes. Okay. And in the process, I lost my long-distance third-party carrier, so I didn't have any long distance, but I didn't know about it until I tried to do a fax. Anyway, as a part of being Verizon, I had a lot of discounts as a loyal customer that were transferred over Frontier.
Nice of them to honor those. That's good.
Yeah, and they honored them for the duration of what was my contract with Verizon at the time.
Yeah.
So one by one, these little incentives started disappearing, and my bills started increasing.
Yeah.
So when Spectrum,
Time Warner's new owner, yeah,
uh-huh. Time Warner's new owner, yeah. You betcha, made me the new, made me an offer, and I talked to the sales rep, and they gave me a good price, and I gave Frontier the opportunity to meet the price, and they couldn't meet the price, and so it was for X number of dollars plus the installation fee, and as a point of haggling, because you're talking.
You should, and by the way, you should do that. This is one area where there is some flexibility in these things.
Yeah, so I said, you've been courting me for a couple of years, and I'm questioning the installation fee.
Yeah.
I think it should be
You should waive it, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and waive the installation fee. He says, yeah. Oh, I can even do better than that.
Ooh.
I can give you twice the internet speed that you were looking at, and give you a bunch of other stuff. But basically what they did was they kicked me up to the second tier level, which I find out later after the fact, because this whole time there's no service agreement. What you get, what they send you is an installation agreement, but they don't send you a service agreement. It's telling you exactly what you're paying for and why you're paying for it.
Okay.
So anyway,
that's always a bad sign, but go on.
Yeah, so I agree.
I'd like to see it in writing. That's what I'd like. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, yeah. I thought I was getting it right.
Yeah, sure.
It took a month for them to get an installation date, and they claimed that there was a problem with the number portability issue that Frontier was not releasing the phone.
Ah.
And
this is a rule that the FCC implemented not so, relatively recently, but the idea was that your phone number was your property, not the property of the company that gives you phone service. And you should have number portability from one service to the other. And there are rules about how quickly Frontier has to give it up. It's called porting your number.
And exactly.
And the FCC even has a page, I'll put a link in the show notes, on their website about all the facts of this. So what's been going on?
Well, okay. I couldn't get an installation date because the claim was that Frontier was not releasing the number.
See, they're supposed to, by law, with one number.
If it's out the number.
They're supposed to port it within 24 hours, one business day.
Yeah, well, okay. I called them on it, and I said, hey, I've called Frontier. I've got a release authorization number, and I gave it to them, and I gave it back to the a sales rep. The original sales rep I was talking with was unavailable, so another guy stepped in and everything. He took my information and got it squared away. Then I get an email notification of an installation date, which was on a very inconvenient day during the week. I'm a small business owner, and I got to deal with walk-in customers all the time, so... anyway, long story short is I finally got an installation date. I didn't want to cancel it because it took so long to get it.
A little shorter. I'm almost out of time. Bottom line, what's going on here?
Okay, well, I wanted to go back. Their Spectrum
Oh, you don't like it, and you want to go back to Frontier.
No. And you're supposed to have a 30-day bailout thing or whatever. Yeah. And now they claim that I was being charged extra for my call forwarding, which was all supposed to be inclusive in the billing.
Yeah.
And they claim that because it needed to be a remote call forwarding because of where the port was located in my local area.
Okay.
So they're charging me an extra $15 a month for the call forwarding in addition to...
I love how this works out because these guys really aren't interested in customer service because they basically...
No!
You don't have much choice, right? It's Spectrum or Frontier pretty much is it. And so they don't
Or
AT&T. There you go. So you have three choices. That should be enough, I think, to make it a little more competitive. They are required. Are they holding your number ransom? Are they saying we're not going to let you transfer your number?
They're claiming that they can't. That Frontier still has the number, and Frontier claims that Spectrum still has the number.
You got to write to the FCC and write to the PUC, the Public Utilities Commission. They're giving you the runaround, but the it's so difficult to solve these problems because. Remember what Lily Tomlin said. We're the phone company. We don't care. We don't have to. These guys are essentially, it's funny because they're not really monopolies, but they're close enough. And they have a memory of being a monopoly, which apparently is how they continue to operate their business. I love the ads for Comcast now where they're kind of tacitly admitting, well, we used to stink. So they're saying something like, we have a new customer-centric policies. New, which is essentially they saying, yeah, we know, we were really awful. But you try us now because we're much better. I've heard so many complaints about Frontier. I'm sure there are just as many equal number of complaints with Spectrum. Dr. Mom says, call the president of Frontier. His office number is 866. Get this, 866. 511-1523. Don't worry, he's not going to pick up the phone, but the office of the executive will, and they're there. Almost every big business, especially ones that deal with a lot of customer complaints, has an office of the executive that's really there to answer these complaints, and they often have much more power, frankly, much more power than your customer service rep, who's poor person is just trying to figure out these arcane rules. 866-511-1523. The good news is you're trying to return to Frontier, so he should be able to help you. You know, they're more likely to help you if you're going to them than if you're going away from them. 8888 Ask Leo. I'm sorry this is going on, but boy, is it universal, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Leo Laporte, Deep Tech Guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, Ask Leo. Somebody asking in the chat room about the next Samsung phone. They are having an event in 11 days on August 23rd. They are announcing, we believe, and I think they've even said, the new Note. Samsung is making a new Note, even after the debacle that was the Note 7. That was the phone they had to recall and cost them billions of dollars to recall it globally. They are saying, we're going to stick with the name Note, the brand. We like it. and we're going to do the Note 8. But, you know, if you think about it, I think that'll probably be the safest phone you can buy, because the last thing Samsung wants to have happen is fire and fury in your pocket. And so they're going to probably jump through hoops. They say they have an 8-point inspection process. It includes X-raying each and every phone to make sure that the battery is safe. And I for one believe them. I miss my Note 7. I loved that phone. Of course, like any sensible person, I handed it back in, got a refund because of it, the danger of it exploding. Mine never got hot. I never had any problems with it. I think it was unlikely to ever explode, but who wants to take the chance? Anyway, we'll let you know. August 23rd. Somebody's asking, well, will you get an advance? I don't actually ever take advantage of manufacturers' offers to get me phones in advance. That comes from the days when the most important review was going to be in print from newspapers or magazines. And those guys often worked magazines, especially with lead times of not just weeks, sometimes months. So companies would get them advanced units. A couple of problems with that. One is they're often not the production units. And so, for instance, the AirPods, a number of my colleagues reviewed Apple's AirPods, but they weren't the final release version of it. And so you don't know if you're reviewing something that the consumer's going to buy. I don't like that. I also don't like calls from PR representatives. I don't like to talk to PR. I don't like to talk to the companies. I like to review it just like you would. You don't have a special pipeline into Samsung. And the final reason is because I want to feel your pain when you lay out $1,000 for a phone. And I think a lot of reviewers are a little insensitive to how much these phones cost. They're outrageous. It's probably the most expensive computer you own. If you're buying a high-end flagship phone, is your phone. So I want to pay that money so I can, when I review it, that's part of the review. Was this worth, $850? So I won't get a Note 8 in advance of the Note 8 release. I won't even get it any sooner than you will. And I realize it puts me at a little bit of a disadvantage compared to the folks who get it early, but at least I'll be reviewing the same product you're buying without any special treatment, without any, well, let's make sure this one doesn't blow up. It's going to be Leo's. I want it to be just like you and review the product you're going to be carrying around. I think that's the right way to do it. It means that I won't be able to give you a review till after, it comes out. But I don't have a 3-month lead time either. 8888, ask Leo the phone number. Back to the phones we go. Carla in Orange County. Hi, Carla. Leo Laporte.
Hey, Leo, I'm having a problem with my computer, and I'm hoping you can help me.
Okay.
So here's the deal. Somebody took over my Google account again.
No, this has happened before?
It happened about 3 years ago. My son went somewhere, did something he shouldn't have. Well, I'm thinking the same thing happened again.
Oh, boy. Well, don't give your son the password next time.
No, he's not allowed to touch mom's computer
Good.
Anymore.
No kidding. What is the symptom? How do you know it's been taken over?
So I go to, I went into YouTube, and all I get is this stuff in Vietnamese, and I don't speak Vietnamese. I'm not Vietnamese.
Now, that may not be that your sister's account's taken over. Google and YouTube determine what country you're in based on your internet address, that 127. Right. That address, and sometimes they get it wrong. That's based on a lookup in a database, and they can get that wrong. When you log into your Gmail, has somebody else been using it?
There's stuff that I don't recognize, and then if I go into YouTube, there's a watch list, and it shows the history of who's
somebody's been watching stuff. Okay.
Right, in Vietnamese. So I'm like, okay, this isn't right.
Ah, well, that would be a cause for concern, yeah. Google has a great security checkup, which I would recommend running through every time you set up an account. But let me answer your question, because obviously, what can I do to help you here?
Right, so I've done the security update. I do two-factor authentication.
Yay.
I checked all the devices. There was a device on there that was not mine.
Good.
I cleared all the... what's the word I'm looking for? I took away all their...
You disconnected the other connected devices. You deleted those.
Right, I disconnected everything.
Yeah.
And then
that's a good idea. The second page of security checkup shows you what devices are logged into your Google account. This is where you can get in trouble because they don't need your password. If you log into Google on a library computer, for instance, it may remember that login. So those are the things that if you don't own these devices, it's time to delete them for sure. In fact,
This has happened before.
Yeah.
I'm looking for something else besides Google for email because obviously Yahoo isn't an option. Google, this has happened a couple of times now.
Well, you were using, let me ask you, have you been using two-factor all along?
Yes, I have.
Seems highly unlikely that your account would be hacked if you're using two-factor. That's a very challenging thing to hack.
I agree, and I actually called Google and said, hey, what's going on here? And they couldn't answer it for me either.
Yeah. So it's the only thing that could be happening is if somebody used your Google account, again, on a public system or somebody else's system, logged in and then had the second factor, you know, got the Google Authenticator number, or nowadays what Google does is send a message to your phone saying, are you logging in? And you say yes. If somebody did that, they've left a cookie on that computer that for 30 days or so will let that computer just go right to that page. But that's something Google and everybody's going to do. That's something you can't avoid. I mean, I can recommend other email providers, but in every case, if you log in and go through all the rigmarole to log in on a public computer, that computer will stay logged in unless sometimes they say there's a checkbox, is this a public computer? If you check that, it won't remember it. But if it's your son or somebody's not really paying attention and doing that, then there's nothing I can recommend to be more protected. Google, in my opinion, is as secure as you can get. I don't know anybody who offers as many protections as Google does. And that security checkup is a very good example. You can use a backup phone number. You can see what if you go to your Gmail account in the bottom right, you can see every device that's been on that account in the last few days.
Right.
There is nobody who bends over backwards more than Google to protect you. So I to answer your question, I don't know of anybody better. I could tell you other people. The one advantage that you'd have by using somebody else is, well, it's not Google. And so people may be more prone to say, well, I don't know why you'd be a target for attack, but Carla, she uses Google. Let's try to get in her account. If I use Fastmail, I recommend it, fastmail.com. That is, they have all the same security, most of the same security features. They have two-factor authentication. They're pretty secure. They don't do the My Security stuff, but since they only do email, it's not as big a deal. There are quite a few others. There's Proton Mail out of Switzerland that promises real privacy because they're under Swiss law. Those are a couple you could try. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm a little puzzled by why you've been broken into twice, especially since after the first time you probably used all of the security features like two-factor, from now on, right?
Right. And I haven't gone into any public, I haven't personally gone into any public computers because I have a computer, I have my phone. So there's no need for it. I don't understand.
I don't see how you could possibly have been hacked, to be honest with you. You did the security checkup, and did you find devices that you had not approved on the security checkup?
Yes, I did. I found an iPad because I don't own an iPad.
Okay.
And I did clear its accessibility.
Good.
But still, it's logging in.
So who else has your
on Yahoo?
Who else has your credentials?
The only person that would have my credentials would be my computer.
And you don't. And that's a desktop. You don't take that out of the house.
My laptop. No, I don't take it out of the house. So I'm really confused as how they're still watching all this stuff on Google.
So you found an iPad that you don't have, so that's a bad sign, I have to say. And somebody's been watching Vietnamese videos that you don't know about. What other symptoms?
It'll do things like I'll be on one page and it'll start like scrolling. It'll scroll up. Some email that's not mine.
Okay, this is not. This is. I think your system has been hacked, not Google. So you can do every security precaution in the world, but if somebody can see every keystroke, can watch your computer, doesn't matter. Uh-huh. They're you.
Right.
So now your burden is a little higher. I think you're – what kind of system is it?
Okay, well
– what's your computer?
Oh, I have a Dell.
It's a Dell desktop or laptop?
Laptop.
Okay. So
I did go in and refresh the whole thing. I took everything off and then just restarted from the beginning, but I'm still getting this stuff going on.
So you wiped it off completely. You started from scratch.
Yep. Now you see why I'm so like, this is not happening.
Yeah, no, this is significant and it's something to pay attention to. I feel like if you see activity like a scrolling that you didn't do or a mouse moving when you're not touching the mouse, that generally means somebody's got what we call remote access to your computer. When you refreshed your system, unless you formatted the drive and completely started over, that remote access Trojan could still be there. So make sure you erase the drive. I mean, like, format the drive.
Okay, so I am going to have to go back and reformat
that. I would do that, and I think that...
I just cleared it and figured, okay, that'll...
No, that's not enough, because... No. You need to back up your data, completely format the drive, be careful about what you install when you reinstall apps. It sounds like somebody has put some... the only thing I can think of, given that you're using strong security on your Google account, and it still lets somebody in, is that somebody else has access to your system.
That's so frustrating.
Why would somebody have access to your system? Are you a well-known person or a wealthy person?
No, not at all. The only person that I can think of, I had a friend who used to be a hacker.
Oh.
And
hello.
Yeah, we got into an argument a while back.
Hello. Okay. Right now, disconnect your computer.
My computer in all the world.
Yeah, disconnect your computer from the internet and completely format the drive and install Windows from scratch.
Okay.
Yeah. Hello.
I
have a friend who used to be a hacker and we got in a fight. Hello.
Well, I was trying to give benefit of the doubt.
No benefit. Because really, anybody can do this if they're skilled enough. Doesn't happen to people, though, unless they make an enemy or you're a target. So I spent a little more time on the phone with Carla because I'm very puzzled by, you know, how could this happen? She's using good security. Google is as secure as anything can be. They know security and they give you all the tools you need to protect your account. It's your fault if you don't use them, but if you use them, you should not get hacked. So I asked her a little more. I said, well, what else is happening? She said, well, the screen scrolls sometimes. And I said, why would you? So now I'm thinking maybe you've been hacked. Maybe there's somebody who's got what we call a remote access Trojan or rat in your computer that allows them to access your computer, see what you're typing. Then they would know your password. They'd even know your two-second factor code. Well, maybe not. That's an interesting question. Make sure if that's one of the reasons Google's now doing the two-factor where it actually sends a pop-up to your phone that says, are you trying to log in? Microsoft does this now, too. It's more secure than the six-digit code. Because if a bad guy got your secret number, then he could duplicate the authenticator codes. You know, he could put that on his phone. But this pop-up can only be done from Google. Now, of course, if he has access to your account before you set it up, I'm starting to think somebody's got access to your system. I said, why do you have any reason why you might be a target? Because normally a bad guy's not going to spend a lot of time and effort, and this takes a lot of time and effort, to hack you without motivation. Are you a movie star? Are you wealthy? If you're an attractive young woman, perhaps you caught somebody's eye. I hate to say it, but that happens. What is going on? She said, well, I did have a friend who was a hacker, and we had a falling out. Woo. Okay. Okay. That might be it. have to be a good hacker. It have to be a very accomplished hacker. And I think a lot of people use that phrase loosely. First of all, hacker is not a bad thing. It really isn't a bad thing. There's malicious hackers, people who use their skills for evil, but there's good hackers, and all hacking means is somebody who likes to get in under the hood and really find out how things work and play with it and mess with it and change it. That's in general a good thing. Almost all the benefits of the technological revolution come from hackers. People like Steve Wozniak, who built the first Apple computer, he was a hacker. Wasn't always a good hacker, actually. Sometimes he did some little shady things. He admits to it. It's okay. It's okay. He's grown up. By the way, 67 years old. Happy birthday, Steve Wozniak. He was 67 yesterday. Wow. Does that make you feel old? Whew. So if you don't make an enemy of a real hacker, like an accomplished hacker, that's a bad thing. And so now I'm thinking, okay, that's the only possible explanation. Google has good security. And if you follow all the rules and you do everything and you cross all the T's and you dot all the I's, you're safe. You really are safe. I feel safe. I'm a target. Here's some guy on the radio claiming to be the tech guy. I'm sure that people try to hack me all the time. But if you use good hygiene, you're probably all right. Unless you make an enemy. If somebody really wants to get you, they can get you. They can. But they have to have a reason. There has to be a motivation. I think we found the motivation. And I'm sorry. Don't make enemies of hackers. My advice to Carla at the end was, you need to erase the hard drive on that computer. I mean, erase every single bit. And do a recovery, not from the recovery partition on the hard drive. That's probably also infected. You need to download from Microsoft. Microsoft offers it. It's called the Windows Media Creation Tool. You download that tool, you run it, and you create it, and preferably on some other computer, but you can do that. That's, I think, would be hard for the bad guy to get into. It makes a USB key with the Windows install files on it. And then when you're in the process of running that installer, you erase the hard drive. You don't install on top of. You erase. You partition. You delete the partitions. You start from complete scratch to get rid of anything he might have left around. 8888 Ask Leo. You got, if you're a hacker and you got other ideas, I'd love to hear from you. Diane in Chicago, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Diane. Hey, Diane, come over to the phone. You're on the radio. Diane, I'm talking to you. So, Diane, according to Kim, she's from Chicago. She wanted my opinion on, it says Microsoft Creator. I think you probably mean the Creator's Update. So Microsoft, I'm going to keep it open in case she says anything incriminating. I shouldn't do that. That would be wrong. I could do that, but it would be wrong. Microsoft pushed out in March, actually it's closer to April, Creators Update number 1 for Windows 10. Had some nice features. This is, I think, the plan going forward. They're going to push out one any day now, probably September, but maybe by the end of August. The second Creators Update, they call it the Fall Creators Update, even though it's spring in the Southern Hemisphere. But they're going to call it and they don't call it fall anywhere but the U.S. They call it autumn everywhere else. But anyway, that's what it's called, the Fall Creators Update. It'll be called probably 1708 or 1709, probably 1708, because they use the year and then the month, right? 1703 was March, 1708 would be August. It has some very nice features. I have to say, in the past, there we have issued caveats about these big updates. This is like a service pack, but Microsoft has been lately really doing these public betas. There's a lot of people, millions of people using it now, reporting back to Microsoft about problems. In fact, they had an update they were going to put out this week, and they announced, we're not. There's a bug. We're not going to put it out. But the bug wasn't a serious showstopper, crash the system. But it was enough that they said, "Nah, we don't want to put out the update yet." They're very close, and many people have tested it. I would say, in general, what to do with these updates. You'll get notification. You won't get it right away. In fact, it's taken a few months for everybody to get 1703. But sometime in the next few months, you'll get a notification. Wait until you get that notification. Do not be in a hurry. You're getting all the security patches. This is not about that. This is about features. And in some cases, they take away stuff. Some cases, they add stuff. Wait until you get the notification. In the meantime, if you get the notification right away, then still wait. Don't apply it right away. You can defer the update for as long as, I think, a month. I would wait. Just read the reviews. Wait, see if people howl. I'll talk about it. If there's a lot of problems with it, you'll for sure hear it on this show. You'll hear howling. You know, watch the tech blogs and so forth. And if everything seems all right after a week or two, I'd go ahead and install it. We did have some problems with the first update to a Windows 10 some years ago that broke some things. But that has been better. I think Microsoft's got a process in place that does a very good job. So you do want these updates in general. The big updates, like the Fall Creators update, are more features than bug fixes, but you still want them because this is the new way going forward. There's not going to be a Windows 11. Once you get to Windows 10, you'll get free updates, you know, forever, for the lifetime of whatever. Satya Nadella, I don't know. Forever in computer terms, next few years. So, but you want them. You do want them. You want to keep up to date. That's almost always my advice. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So I've been using 1703 on all my systems for some time. You know, the features are not significant, but, you know, you want to keep up with Microsoft. I just want to celebrate another day of Dickie D. Bartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer for 50 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the star of our show. Hey, I wanted to tell you, you recommended this streaming site called Broadway HD, which yes. I really enjoyed. In fact, I subscribed to it because they were doing the last night of a Broadway show called She Loves Me?
She Loves Me, yes.
Which was wonderful, with Laura Benanti. And I just fell in love with Laura Benanti. She's one of my favorite Broadway
stars.
She's
great. Yeah. She's great.
And I was just pleased to see she's just been cast in Steve Martin's new comedy. You've got to go see it. It opens in late November, called Meteor Shower. It's Amy Schumer's Broadway debut. Laura Benanti is in it. Key of Key and Peele is in it.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it's going to be, and I've seen the show. I saw the show in San Diego. It's hysterical. I just want to give you a little heads up. If you like Laura, is it Benanti or I think it's Benanti? Nice,
I think
Italian
it's Benanti.
Girl.
I'm, yeah. I'm not sure. But
very
she's great.
Talented, and so it's not a musical. It's just a play, but it's funny. Anyway,
that's great.
We wanted to issue a severe, serious warning, right, Dick?
Yes, exactly. Last week we talked about solar glasses. I bought mine on Amazon. I think Amazon had sold out of them. But no matter what, Amazon sent me an email this morning. I'm sure if you bought glasses there, you got it. Two, that they've been unable to verify that the glasses actually come from sources that meet all the ISO requirements.
No.
And they are saying all people's money will be refunded, and do not use the glasses.
Could blind yourself.
Yes, exactly.
So
exactly.
We had mentioned that you should look for the ISO, you know, approval on the
yes,
on the back
yes.
of these,
and that you want them to be manufactured by Lund, L-U-N-T, and mine are those, and they have the Lund logo.
But these
logo.
Guys just are lying. They just printed it on
it,
there.
It could be that they just totally knocked them off. My.
So you have some, right? Are you going to use them?
I have them from two. No, I'm not going to use them. No.
Yeah,
I'm
that's
going
very
to put
dangerous.
My back to the sun. Yes.
Good. That's yeah. your best thing to do. Don't look at it. Walk away. Just walk away.
Walk away.
Yes.
Walk away.
John has some that he's pretty sure are good because he already looked at the sun and he's not blind. So that's one way to test it.
That, yeah.
If you have those glasses, just put them on, look at the sun, and if you're blinded, don't use them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Perfect advice.
All right, Dick. Now, Dick joins us every week. with a gadget. Usually it's not dangerous, but it could be. A gadget or a gizmo he's found in his travels. Yeah.
Something that I love. I'm pulling together a spot for ABC News on back to school gadgets. So I'm buying lots of stuff. And I found this neat folding wireless keyboard that's small enough to go in a little pouch that comes with it. But when you unfold it, it's the exact size of my computer keyboard.
Wow.
And wait, there's more.
There's more?
It lights up with LEDs.
Holy camoly.
You can have a blue, a green, or a red keyboard.
Is it like this one?
Oh, Leo, don't tell me you have the exact same.
Well, I don't have your good one.
I have the old
iClever.
Well, yeah, you have it from El Crapo.
Yeah. No, I was sad because this is a smaller keyboard, and it has one flaw that makes it unusable, which is that the shift key is tiny, and it's to the right of the arrow key, so I always hit the arrow key accidentally, and I can't use it. But they fixed that in the new one, and you have all those colors and everything.
Yeah. The new one has a full-size shift key, a full-size backspace key.
Who makes that one?
It's called the company's not too clever because their name is iClever.
Yeah, it's the same company.
Yeah.
Everybody should know. Grammatically, it should be me clever.
Yeah.
Yes.
And yours was like $30, right?
Yeah, you got the good one. I'm kicking myself.
$40.
Yeah,
spend
a little extra, 90. Leo.
Yeah.
Get a good one.
Bluetooth, and it can also be used via USB. And
it's nice,
though,
because if you have an iPad or even a phone that you can have a Bluetooth keyboard with, you carry that keyboard. It fits in your purse or your briefcase. And
What got me thinking about it is that I read several articles that kids are going back to college just with iPads, tablets.
Wow.
Yeah. And that they're giving up laptops. And I figure if you're going to take notes, one of these big key keyboards is the way to go.
Well,
yeah, yours is a little bit smaller than mine.
Yeah, I'm going to order that one because I haven't given them enough of my money. Now who's clever?
Now.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, and mine is aluminum. Is yours plastic?
No, it's aluminum. I should have gone to gizwiz.biz, though, before I buy. Before you buy anything, go to gizwiz.biz. That's Dick's website, gizwiz.biz. Click on the Gizwiz Visits the Tech Guy, and he's got links to this keyboard and all of the great products he mentions, and you can just get them. You know, don't get the wrong one. This is the Ultra. I got the Sub-Ultra. The less than Ultra. This is so much better. Yeah. And it's $39,
$39.99. I put on my little postal scale here at 9.6 ounces, so it's not bad.
It folds up.
It folds up. Folds in three pieces.
Yeah. That's good. All right. Good. I wish I'd heard from you sooner. Does yours come, though, with a fine pseudo velvet pouch?
Yes.
Oh.
A better pouch than that. Like it comes with luxuriant Corinthian leather.
Fine.
No.
It's Alcantara. Thank you, Dickie.
It comes with the same cloth bag.
Gizwiz.biz is the website. And if you want to follow his podcast every week, he and Chad Johnson have such great stuff. It's gizwiz.tv. Gizwiz.tv.
That it is.
Somebody was saying in the chat room.
Yes.
That you mentioned something that I would be interested in on that show. And I don't know. I guess I'll have to listen to the show. But what was it they were talking about? They said, make sure to ask Dick about XYZ, but now I don't remember.
Oh, well, they'll do it after the show, and I'll mention it next week.
Okay. Thank you, Dick.
Okay, buddy, I'll talk to you.
Take care. Last call of the day, I'm afraid. Let's see. Who's on the line here? It's from Fresno, Dan. Hi, Dan.
Hey, Leo.
Welcome to the show. Thanks for hanging on. What can I do for you today? Actually, if you're on the line, keep on the line. Everybody, keep on the line, because I think we're going to keep answering calls after the show's over. I just decided. I'm going to get to all of you. All right, Dan. I feel bad. I hate to leave people behind. What can I do for you, Dan?
Yeah, no, I am having a problem with my third-gen Apple TV.
Uh-oh.
When I switch to the input for that, it doesn't seem to wake up.
Yeah. You have to press the remote control button.
Right, and that doesn't work. So
ah.
even if
Well, make sure your remote's charged up. This is this is something I actually hate about the Apple TV. It sleeps, and switching to the HDMI does not wake it. You need to press the remote button to get it to.
Right.
And until you see the light come on, you won't get any picture. And it drives me nuts.
I know. Yeah, no.
But even if
help.
You press the remote, it doesn't wake it up.
No, it does not wake it up. I've tried switching out cables. I've tried switching inputs. The only thing that will wake it up is unplugging it from the wall.
Oh, that's bad.
And plugging it back in. Then
well,
it works fine.
You can. There is a reset button in the settings of the Apple TV where you erase it and set it back to factory settings. I would try that before you do anything else.
Yeah.
But it could be a hardware flaw. I mean, I know that whole problem with it not waking up, but it should wake up from the remote. Make sure your remote's fully charged. Sometimes, you know, the remotes on the Apple TV are actually, you charge them from the lightning port. So, and it goes a long time, so you might forget that, hey, I need to charge this once in a while. But, yeah, having to unplug it and plug it in again, that's useless. All I can say is call Apple and refresh it, see if that gets better. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, thanks for joining me. Have a great Geek Week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.